And what is good, everyone? Welcome to KGW's 3-on-3 Blazers. My name is Orlando Sanchez. Jared Cowley on my right, Nate Hansen on my left, the one and only Max Barr on the ones and twos. Welcome to another edition and podcast. We've been waiting for a game like this, and the Portland Trail Blazers did something we haven't seen in quite some time.
Maybe all season long.
And that was play really well and beat a good team.
Yep. They actually play defense, guys.
Yeah, that
was the biggest surprise to me of the entire game against Houston, is that from about tip till the buzzer at the end, we had 48 minutes of good, solid defense from the Blazers. And I mean, you hold James Harden to a season low 13 points. It was unexpected and impressive at the same time.
I don't know about you guys, but I was kind of just waiting on, okay, yep, when is this going to fade?
100%.
When is it going to wear off?
Yeah, I was going to say that my biggest surprise was that they played 4 full quarters.
Yeah.
Because I kept expecting Harden to hit 3 or 4 threes in a row and the Rockets to go on a run and just run away with it in the end. But the Blazers pretty much led that thing from start to finish and never seemed like they were out of control of winning that game.
I was about to ask you, early in the fourth quarter when the Rockets cut it to like 6
whatever,
what were you thinking the Blazers were actually going to hold on and win that game? Because I certainly was not.
No,
I thought
it was over,
here
man.
We go. This is happening.
I don't know. I wasn't quite there yet.
All right. Jared still has some of that optimism. Yeah, he didn't kill it all last week.
Well, guys, you know the drill. There's 3 of us. There's 3 questions, so there's 3 answers on KGW.com. So let's dive right into it. And we've got to talk about this Rockets game. First, was this the best win of the season? And second, does a win like that have any meaningful impact for the Blazers going forward?
Yeah, I think it was the best win of the season, and I don't think it was close. I mean, the only one that I'd put up there was the third game of the season when they beat the Mavericks on the road. But even in that game, they didn't play well for the entire game. They had to come back from 19 points down to win that game. Houston, they're one of the best teams in the NBA. They were completely healthy. It was on the road. The Blazers, like we talked about, they had controlled the game from start to finish. So there's no asterisk on this win. So best win of the season. It's also the first time, and I talked about this with a few people, it's the first time I can remember in a while enjoying watching a Blazers game.
Yeah.
And that's kind of mean, but the Blazers are just the worst combination right now in that they are boring and they're frustrating to watch.
Yes.
Because we've seen this on offense. They get bogged down with isolation, lack of ball movement, and that makes them boring to watch. And then on defense, they're so inept that it makes them frustrating to watch. And so boring and frustrating, it's a terrible combination. But last night, like we talked about, they executed. They actually had a defensive game plan, and they executed it. It was this odd kind of box in one or diamond in one zone defense. And they've thrown that out a little bit, especially since Carmelo Anthony got here. But up to this point, they haven't really executed it. And last night, they did. I mean, it takes really good one-on-one defense against James Harden. And then it takes every other player on the court executing the fundamentals of that zone defense to make sure that they're helping, you know, when someone gets by their man. And they, for the most part, they did that throughout the entire game. And that was really impressive. The offense was still a lot of iso ball, but at the same time, they made plays when they needed to. When the Rockets would make little pushes, they would push back. So it was the best win of the season, one of the Blazers' best performances of the season. And it was great to see. Now, does it have a meaningful impact going forward? That's up to the Blazers, okay? Because I have to trust right now what you've seen from them up to this point in the season, which is that they're not a very good team. I went back and looked at other teams, bad teams that have beat the Rockets this season. They lost to the Kings, the Pistons, the Warriors, the Pelicans, and it's not like those wins flipped a switch for those teams.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can expect that for the Blazers. I know Blazers fans would want it to be something bigger. They want it to be the catalyst to one of these second half surges we've seen from the Blazers and from Damian Lillard, but that's on the Blazers. They have to prove it, and I have to see more from them before I'm willing to think that this was anything other than a team getting hot one night and beating a team that wasn't really on top of their game.
And the Rockets haven't been on top of their game for about the last week. They're struggling a little bit right now, so fortunately for the Blazers, they did catch him probably at the right time. But nevertheless, Jared is right. This isn't even close in terms of their best win of the season. I mean, They've only had 5 wins against teams with winning records. 2 of them were Oklahoma City when they were struggling early in the year.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Dallas win, and that was really too early in the year to say, like, oh, that was a great team win. You know, Blazers, that was a Zach Collins game where he got hurt, you know.
And at that point, you didn't know that the Mavericks were this good.
Yeah, exactly. And then with Toronto, they were missing their best players when the Blazers beat them last week. So it's really, this isn't even close. And I touched on earlier, the defense was the biggest change from what we haven't seen from the Blazers in the past. Is we've seen them play well offensively last night. I believe all 5 starters scored in double figures last night. And we've seen that before with the Blazers, and they still end up losing.
Yeah.
It's because they don't play any defense. And we finally saw them play some team defense yesterday. Jason Quick had his write-up of last night's game in The Athletic, where he talked about early in the third quarter, James Harden, CJ forced them baseline like they wanted to, and then Hassan Whiteside wasn't there to help, and James Harden got an easy layup, and Stotts immediately called timeout and lit into Hassan Whiteside for not helping out and holding him accountable. And Damian Lillard, you know, was quoted as saying, I have no problem with holding guys more accountable. He feels they have, but it could probably be taken to another level, and they're going to need that type of accountability just because of their depth issues, because of what they lack overall as a team because of injuries. They have to play near-perfect basketball to beat good teams, and that was what they did last night. Kent Bazemore struggled shooting. Dame struggled shooting from 3, but CJ was lights out for the most part. Melo was lights out. Hassan Whiteside had his best game in a long time last night. And everything just melted right for them. And as for what this means going forward, Jared said it in a very nice way that this is up for the Blazers. This means nothing going forward for me in terms of what to expect for the Blazers. I think they played really well one night, but I got 41 games in my back pocket that say this team is not very good. And so I'm going to lean on those 41.
It's pretty rare where I actually care about defense.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't care about defense. I don't really care to watch it. It's just part of the game that I have to deal with to watch the offense. But make no mistake about it, like, it was entertaining basketball last night, to your point, Jared. I enjoyed watching them play defense. And even when they were playing offense, they were playing defense. In the third quarter, Dame wanted Harden on him to attack him.
Yep.
And really wear him down. And that they, even in the post-game interview, hearing Dame talk about how important it was to try and get the ball out of Harden's hands.
Yeah.
And to see them execute a game plan like that defensively, at least minimum, shows me that they can do that. And they did it against the most prolific scorer we've seen in years. Wow. It was having one of the greatest tears of all time, scoring-wise.
They had another prolific scorer in the Moda Center this past Saturday, too, and that did not go as well.
Yeah, he's not scoring the way Harden is, though.
Well, he is we're not going to get into this, but if you average their 36 per, Giannis is scoring just as much as Harden. He only plays 30 minutes a game.
Yeah, but who's scoring more?
Because he's playing more minutes, but yes.
Yes. I mean, you can make the disclaimer all you want.
Yeah, okay.
But when they hand out, you know, scoring champion.
Yeah, James Harden's going to be scoring champion. Yes.
And what they did to him was very impressive. Now, maybe he had an off night, and next time they meet up, or they've still got more games.
They got at least one more.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe next time they play again, they try the same thing, and he lights them up. But minimum, it shows me that they can do what they set out to do defensively. And offensively, to your point, they got help off the bench. Everybody who went into the game scored a bucket.
Yes.
Which is an improvement.
The bench scored 20 points, which seems like it's about double what they
normally do. Exactly. Like, I was like, oh my goodness, they're hitting shots, you know? And
even Kent Bazemore hit a random 3 here and there. I mean, he took like 20 of them, but he made a couple.
But I think Bazemore, I mean, he missed shots, but I thought that was one of the best games I've seen from him in a while. Mm-hmm. You know, he rebounded the ball. He was engaged. He played actual solid fundamental defense instead of over-aggressive, over-eager defense and fouling a lot. I was impressed with Bazemore last night.
And there was a sequence that was late in that game when it got cut to 6 where we saw back-to-back 3-pointers from bench players. I think Tolliver hit one, and
CJ hit
the big one. And so it was just, you saw, it wasn't just Dame and or CJ taking over this game.
Yeah.
Like, you got contribution from other places.
Absolutely.
So even when Dame took over in the third quarter, I know that he had to feel good about kicking it out and knowing, like, I made the right play. They're going to hit a shot. They're going to help us out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to your point, Nate, we've seen 41 other reasons why we shouldn't believe what we saw.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we also saw something we haven't seen before.
That's true. I have a question, and this is going to go back to a discussion we had about a month ago when we discussed best backcourt, and this doesn't even have to be a discussion. You guys took Harden and Westbrook over Dame and CJ. Does anything of last night change your opinion?
Overall, no.
No, yeah.
I mean, Harden was shut down last night, and I think that Westbrook is certainly worse than Lillard, and I don't know. He's probably better than CJ, but... but no, I still think that Houston has the best backcourt.
I love that you brought up Westbrook because I can't believe this should have been the top of mind. But I love the other thing about this whole game was I was waiting for the trash talk.
Yeah.
And it did. It delivered as usual. I mean, he was
the most
off.
Russell Westbrook trash talk.
It
was so Russell Westbrook. Like he scored. He had this huge. He ended up with a triple double. Right.
Yes,
they were hyping it up all game. Yeah. And he dropped 30 points and he's talking trash down 10 with 4 minutes left. It's Oh, Russell Westbrook.
We've talked about empty stats on this podcast before, and Russell Westbrook is the king of empty stats.
Yeah, he and Hassan Whiteside actually had an impact in the game yesterday, whereas Russell Westbrook did not.
Like him saying, you know, it's impossible to guard me. He's going to the free throw line, and he misses
the free
throw. Like, it was so good. It was entertaining. Even during the handshakes, he's still talking. He's talking to Blazers security about who knows what.
He was still talking after the game.
Yes. I mean, and even Dame is like shaking his head like, well, that's Russ. Like, it had that look to it. But I enjoyed it. It was not only their best win of the season, but probably their most entertaining as well. And that was a lot of fun. It reminded me of what it was like to watch a Blazers game last year.
Yes. And back to the question about whether this is meaningful. I think if the Blazers' schedule going forward wasn't so murderous, I might feel differently about it.
Or maybe if the Blazers were a better team, because therefore the schedule wouldn't seem as murderous if they were a better team.
But they're not. I mean, but if like they had just kind of a normal schedule going forward, then I might be able to see them. They could turn this into some momentum. But it's that, you know, until the All-Star break and until the trade deadline and even a little bit after, they're just playing winning team after winning team after winning team after winning team. And it's really hard for me to see them, this roster as it is right now, maintain any kind of momentum. I don't know. I'd like to see them be able to do that and get Nurkic back and see what can happen, but I just need to see more from them.
Well, this is going to be a point in the season, at least podcast-wise, where we're going to look back on this moment and we're either going to be so right or so wrong.
I think in about two weeks we're going to forget they even won this game. I think we're going to be at that point with the Blazers. So.
Question number two. Okay, we've got 3 weeks to the NBA trade deadline, and the rumor machine is going crazy right now. But there have been a couple of reports about the Blazers in the past week. The Athletic's Sam Amick reported that sources close to the Blazers are downplaying that Kevin Love is a viable trade option for Portland. And ESPN's Brian Windhorst said that the message he's hearing is that the Blazers are putting out that they might stand pat at the deadline. Is this really going to be a quiet trade deadline for the Blazers?
Oh, man, these trade questions just keep getting worse and worse as we get closer to the deadline. Like, all the first couple months of the season is who is going to be the big star forward? It wasn't are they going to. It was who is it going to be?
Yeah.
Man. And then the last couple of weeks is going to be, well, are they going to get a big star forward or are we just going to settle for some role players? Now, like, the role players, if they get a couple role players, we'll be, like, popping champagne. Pain in here that they did something at this point. I'm still right where I am before, and I have no idea. None of us do on what the market is like, who's available, what it's going to take to bring them on board, what the Blazers prioritize in terms of bringing a player on board. But I just can't go, you can't do nothing. Like, standing pat makes no sense. If Yusuf Nurkic is back, and that's your hope, which is the underlying theme here, is they're hoping Yusuf Nurkic comes back, things will turn around for the Blazers, they'll make the playoffs, and they'll see what they can do once they get in there. But if Yusuf Nurkic is back, why is Hassan Whiteside on the roster at $27 million and just going to probably walk away at the end of the year? Why keep him? There's no reason for it whatsoever. Same with Kent Bazemore. You know, the Blazers aren't going to bring back Kent Bazemore next year. No way. So why keep him here till the end of the year? yes, it may be difficult to trade him, and yes, it may not be what you wanted, and maybe you do lose that PR hit, but I still want something rather than nothing. And this still makes my blood boil, guys. Like, the idea of this, it's just, logically, it doesn't make any sense. It seems insane.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. It doesn't make any sense to me why you wouldn't try to take advantage of these assets that you have. You know this is Damian Lillard's prime. You know this is the time to try and build this roster into the closest thing you can to championship contention, because that's what Dame wants and that's what Dame deserves. But there are a lot of reasons why this could be a quiet trade deadline. You might be seeing that the trade market for expiring contracts has diminished considerably, and that lessens the trade value of both Whiteside and Bazemore, because I don't think they have any trade value on their own.
No.
No, Bazemore's not playing well, and Hassan Whiteside has a reputation as not being a player who makes winning plays. And so I don't think teams are beating down the Blazers' door to get them unless the expiring contracts have value, and right now it seems like they don't. It might be that the kind of players the Blazers want to trade for, and you kind of touched on this, Nate, that even if they're not out there, they should still do something. But it might be that they have the kind of player in mind, and those players just aren't on the market right now, or the asking price for them is too high. It might also be financial.
Yes, that's a good
point.
We
don't know where ownership is right now. Trading either of those two players most likely brings back players with contracts that extend beyond this season. So ownership might think right now that letting almost $50 million of contracts expire and come off an already overcrowded salary cap is the right thing to do. I don't know if I agree with that, but I could absolutely see ownership thinking that because of the way this season has gone. And if ownership has made that decision and instructed Neil Shea about that, then there's nothing that can be done.
Yeah.
And so with the reports we've seen, these two reports from Amick and Windhorse, I think there's a couple things possibly at play. The first scenario is maybe this really is the Blazers' plan. Maybe they plan to stand pat. And Neil Shea kind of taking the lid off the no leak, you know, mantra that he has and that the front office has might be a way to inform other executives of that and also kind of lessen the blow for Blazers fans.
Yeah.
Kind of get that in their minds ahead of time so that what would be a no doubt demoralizing trade deadline day, they're prepared for it. The other option is that the Blazers don't have any leverage right now. And so Neil Shea is putting this information out there to try to create some leverage. Every executive knows the Blazers' two most available pieces are Whiteside and Bazemore, and right now it looks like their value is diminished. And so Neil Shea could be thinking that he puts this information out there, especially to other executives, that they're not even interested in being in the trade market at all. And maybe as you get closer to the deadline, that prompts other front offices to improve their trade offers in conversations with the Blazers. Honestly, I think the second scenario makes more sense.
Yes.
Unless the ownership has said, we need to let these contracts expire. But if that hasn't happened, I think that Neil Shea is trying to play, you know, front office mind games here. That makes most sense to me.
If I'm another team's front office and I hear the Blazers want to stand pat, I say, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's going to work. Like, that's not going to threaten me to, you know, try to get Hassan Whiteside and Kent Bazemore's expiring contracts. I'll go and look elsewhere to try to make something. Like, the Blazers standing pat, especially if you're like a Western Conference team, the Blazers standing pat is the best news for the rest of the conference, because that's one less team who's going to be a potential title contender moving in the next couple of years. So that wouldn't scare me at all. And now the ownership thing, cutting costs, that I think has the most legitimacy in terms of our theories here on why the Blazers would not do anything. Because they still have the highest payroll in the NBA, and the team is 18-24 right now, and they're not going to contend for a championship this year. And so when you're looking at that, you're saying, why are we paying so much money for a team who's not even, who will barely make the playoffs at best? But you also have to realize we're still going to be paying a ton of money moving forward. You know, Dame and CJ are not going to get cheaper as they move forward, and the goal is to still win a championship, and you're going to have to pay at some point top dollar again. And when are you going to have the opportunity to do that again and get that type of player that'll be worth that top dollar? I don't know when that will be available to them again.
One point with that would be to reset the luxury tax.
Yes.
Because when the the penalties become really punitive is when you are a repeater. And it's three seasons of repeating as a luxury team. The Blazers, this is their second team or second season paying the luxury tax. So if they don't reset for next season and not be in the luxury tax, then those penalties are going to be severe. And so that might be their thinking, is that instead of bringing on, like, say they were to trade for Kevin Love, you bring in Kevin Love, even though it's a talent upgrade, it's going to be really hard to stay under the luxury tax next season. And then you're not getting under the luxury tax after that. Mm-hmm. And so then it gets even worse and worse and worse. So they might be looking to try and reset that for next season.
The ownership angle is super fascinating, because even though Olshay has come out and said, Jody Allen is all in on this thing.
She was last year.
You could see it. I mean, yeah.
Even in the offseason.
I was there in Denver. She was out there excited with all the players, hugging them as they were coming into the locker room. I remember that stuff. But we're really going to see in a moment like this, like, how much is she about it? You know, the way that Paul Allen was. Mm-hmm. So I think that, to your point, like, that probably has the most legitimacy to the Blazers standing pat, if that happens. Now, I'm not refuting what they're reporting, and I don't doubt that they're hearing stuff from great sources.
They're good reporters.
But this is how the Blazers roll, man. Like, we still have 3 weeks until the trade deadline. And I think even in our previous conversations, we said, you know what, this is going to be a thing that's going to take a little while. Like, there's a whole filling out process between GMs where they say, all right, what's on the table here? And it's a back and forth. Like, these type of things rarely get done immediately as soon as they can pull the trigger.
Yeah.
And, I mean, how many big deals are you seeing so far right now? We're not seeing a whole lot of action yet.
No.
It's still so early in this process.
You need the deadline to force desperation, essentially. And that's what the Blazers – that's what will be interesting, is how desperate are the Blazers going to be to try to be a title contender in Dame's prime. Because say they don't want to be get into that repeater luxury tax, and they do cut salary back for next season. Well, when are you going to get another top-of-the-line star forward to pair with Nurk, CJ, and Dame? Because I think we're all, for the most part, in agreement. Those three plus what they have right now and other role players is not going to be enough to win a title during Dame's prime. So at some point, like, you don't have these opportunities, which is why it's just mind-boggling to me that they would just totally let this go to waste. And we'll see, we know, when they're up against the hours come February 6th, if they're really that desperate.
Right.
And that dedicated to doing this.
And yeah, of course, this could be like the let's temper expectations, things are getting out of control in Rip City. And maybe Kevin Love wasn't their first target anyway.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're going to downplay Kevin Love as a viable trade option, because that's like probably plan C or D for them.
And I would hope so.
And there are so many other guys out there that we don't even know could be on the table, that could be on the trading block, that teams may be willing to trade. So I would say pump the brakes on this, Rip City. Like,
don't kill Neil Olshay yet.
Not yet. Not until February 6th.
Just start getting the pitchforks ready for February 6th, baby.
Yeah.
But getting them ready.
But at this point, it's just too early in the process, league-wide, much less, the Blazers. But I do think it's a super interesting discussion, and you bring up some really interesting points, Jared, on the possibilities of why this wouldn't happen.
Really quick, and I'll try to make this fast, because I don't want to belabor this point, and I think we should move on. But one of the main things that makes me think it is a financial issue is Kevin Love, actually. Because we have good reporting that the Blazers tried to trade for Kevin Love a year ago.
Yeah.
And now the only difference with Kevin Love is he has a longer-term contract, which has, a big amount of money for the next three seasons beyond this one. Other than that, he's healthier than he was at that point. He's having a good season. So what has changed? The only thing that has changed with Kevin Love, and whether you think Kevin Love is a good fit or not, is not my point, because we know the Blazers liked him a year ago.
Yeah.
So if they don't like him now and the only thing that's different is money, then it makes sense that it might be finances.
Yeah, and I feel like his trade value now would be less than what it was a year ago in terms of what you'd have to give up to get him. So,
yeah, we'll and besides the injuries and the age, like, that's what it's been, right? That contract is always so big, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, let's move on, because that's going to be a topic that we're going to probably discuss for the next 3 weeks.
Not – I mean, this isn't just like the Portland Trail Blazers. This isn't just like us, like NBA-wide, like, they're one of the couple handful of teams that, like, league-wide people are looking at is,
yeah,
what are you going to do right at this trade deadline? Because they've been setting up for it for 6 months now.
Besides the wins and losses, the two big stories. When is Yusuf Nurkic coming back, and what are the Blazers going to do by February 6th? All right, question number three. It's prediction time. The Blazers play three games between now and our next podcast. They've got two more on the road, Friday at the Mavericks, who are 26-15, Saturday at the Thunder, they're 23-18, and then they come back home on Monday to face the Warriors, who are 9-33.
Woo, baby.
Yeah, right. Which games do the Blazers win, and which games do the Blazers lose? You want to give us the update on our standings?
Sure. How about I do that? Orlando, 26-13 on the year, still doing fairly well. Although, Jared and I gained a game on you last week because you were a fool and picked the Blazers to beat Minnesota. And that they did not beat Minnesota, not even come
close. Good for a quarter, man. I was feeling nice.
Yeah, those other three were not. The other 36 minutes were rough. Jared is only now one game behind you at 25-14, and I'm now two games behind you at 24-15. So we're still. I feel like we're ahead of where we were last year at this time in terms of games over 500 and how we're doing with these picks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I think so.
Just looking on this on his face, I feel like we're going to be the same. Guys,
it has that vibe.
I mean, they're
Max is extremely bored right now.
Yeah, we Max, chime in here. You look disgusted.
Just make the pick. I mean, it's 1-2. Just say everyone, you guys are going 1-2.
Yes,
but it could be they could turn it around, Max. They just beat the Rockets. James Harden, 13 points. We're making a run to the Western Conference Finals again. Come on. No,
I'll only believe it when you say 2-1.
Okay, well. Oh. I 1-2. 1-2. Yeah, they beat the Warriors, lose the other two. Although, 0-3 is in the books because the Warriors have played them tough twice, beat them once, lost them the other.
Were you at all tempted to take them to beat OKC?
No.
No?
No way.
Me neither.
I
That's
was,
where we're
at. Oh, I was a little bit.
Oh, did
I
you?
Was. No.
Oh, you're not going to give us another freebie this week?
No.
Oh, come on.
I gave you one last week.
Come
man.
On, man.
But I was a little tempted by that OKC game.
Let me see if I can change your mind. Steven Adams has injured his knee.
Hmm.
I think the Thunder has a game Friday as well. He's questionable. Hmm. If he's out, can the Blazers beat him?
No.
Okay.
The only thing that would have changed my mind with OKC, because I don't think that they're going to beat the Mavericks, would have, if it was at home, I might have gone back and forth on it. But because it's on the road, no, I mean, one game doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
We have to see more. The MO for the Blazers is they, for the most part, they beat the bad teams and they lose to the good teams. And so this has to be a 1-2 week.
All right. Well, we got
and
it over
Blazers,
with.
Prove us wrong.
We got it over with nice and quick for you, Max.
There
I guess
you, go, Max.
You just wanted to take over the microphone. Go ahead and do your thing here now. It has to be all about Max apparently now.
It wasn't quick enough.
Oh, sorry.
Room for improvement, brother.
You've got mail.
We've got a few listener questions to go over. Thanks again to everyone who submitted the questions. Jared, let people know how they can get involved.
Yeah, if you want to email us questions, you can email us at 3on3blazers@gmail.com. You can also reach out to us on Twitter and tweet your questions at us. We will put out tweets asking for questions the day of or the day before the podcast, so look for those tweets. You can find me on Twitter at Jared Cowley.
At Orlando KGW.
At Enhance underscore KGW.
And I am at Max and Barr. So we got some questions from Kimmy Goat here that you guys have all basically addressed. They're good questions. There, can the Houston win be the turnaround for the season? And is it true that that Bazemore and Whiteside might not go anywhere? So let's move on to Dan Nell's question. Any word on Collins' return?
Well, we had the report from Jason Quick a week ago that Collins will be cleared for, I think, on-court work, but not, like, contact and not practice or anything like that, at the All-Star break. Yeah. And that Collins said that he definitely will come back this season. Now, whether he's allowed to or not is another question, and that he plans to play again, I think, in March.
Given if the Blazers really, truly believe they may stand pat, then the expectation, I'm sure, internally within the organization is he's going to be back at some point this year as well.
Yeah. I think we talked about it before. I think it's important for him and Nurkic to get some reps together on the court this season.
Absolutely.
Well, that leads us into Brad Williams' question. When is Nurk coming back?
I still feel like the All-Star break is... What was that date? Jared, you picked out a date like a month or two ago. They're going to play the Pelicans in Portland. It was late in February.
It was the first game after the All-Star break. I think it's February 21st.
Yeah.
I don't have a calendar in front of me, but that was my guess. My only question is if he's going to come back when he's ready.
Yeah.
And if that's before the All-Star break, if that's before the trade deadline, then that's going to happen. But I think the most likely scenario is, again, that it happens sometime around the All-Star break.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting, what day is it right now in January? The 16th today? Yeah. So, I mean, February 21st is just a little over a month away. I feel like if it was going to happen, you know, anytime, even before the All-Star break, we'd start hearing a little bit of something about how it could be an early return for him, and we still haven't heard anything. So I'm going to settle kind of with the original game plan around a little after the All-Star break.
Next question is from A.B. Fogelquist.
I want to hear Orlando answer one of these.
I should actually say I'm nodding in agreement.
Yeah.
I like where you're going.
A.B. wants to know, who do you need back in the lineup to build on momentum? Is it someone else other than Nurkic?
We'll let Orlando go first on this
Nurk,
one.
Nurk, baby.
Yeah.
Nurk.
It's 100%.
Like, he is that important to this team.
Yeah. I mean, I think some people can forget just how good he was for Portland last year. And granted, I personally don't expect him to be that player when he returns. I think it's going to take him some time, and it may take him some time even into the beginning of next season. It may not be mid-season 2020-2021 until we start seeing that Nurkic we saw last year, where he was the Blazers' second-best player on their team. He had surpassed C.J. McCollum, certainly in terms of valuable, but I think in terms of just overall ability and what he meant to the team, he was Portland's second-best player before he got hurt. He was playing at a really high level, and he's their best defensive player. Defensively, there are so many things would be improved just by having Yusuf Nurkic back.
And on offense, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he impacts the game more than anyone else on this team other than Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
And on offense, I mean, the Blazers have slipped to about middle of the league this season in offense, and I think the main reason for that is because they don't have Yusuf Nurkic. His ability to make plays for others is the biggest difference between him and Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah.
You know, in the pick and roll, Hassan Whiteside is a pretty good role man. He can score, but Nurkic makes plays for everyone, and he opens up ball movement. He'll get rid of, you know, the Blazers' reliance on ISO like we've seen this season. It's Nurkic for sure.
All right, last question here. This is from our buddy Matthew, the Reverend Romulus.
Oh, he stuck around with us, Max, even after you took some shots last week.
Well, I didn't hear any response from him.
Oh, I don't want to start a Twitter beef here between you two.
We love Matthew. Yeah. I just thought we were his number one.
Yeah, before anyone else.
All right, so Matthew says, Tolliver and Bazemore have both put together a couple of nice games in the last week. We didn't talk about that Tolliver game against the Hornets.
The Hornets, yeah.
Unreal.
If they don't win that game, think of how badly we... Like, they were on the brink of losing to the Hornets. They would have lost that game if it wasn't for Tolliver.
Totally.
Which of the two, Tolliver or Bazemore, is the most likely to keep up this productive play going forward? And does good play from Bazemore make him more or less likely to be moved at the deadline?
Cool. Man. We need Bazemore to play better.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah,
but which one is more likely to play better was the question, not who do they need more to play better. Which one is more likely?
They're both getting reps.
I feel, for me, I think the answer is Tolliver. Just because, I mean, Bazemore has played and played and played, and he has been pretty much the same player all season. Tolliver's minutes have gone up and down, and he's getting a little more opportunity right now. We've seen now a couple of games. Like, I don't think Tolliver... I think he has room to grow, whereas Bazemore, I don't know how much room Bazemore has to grow. I think kind of what we're seeing is what he is at this point in his career. So I'm going to say Tolliver.
Yeah, I actually trust in Tolliver a little bit more to keep up this play going forward, because I feel like outside of shooting, Tolliver has been just a cagey veteran, you know, what you'd expect on the court. He's in the right, you know, spots on the court when he's supposed to be. He's fine. He's solid out there, but he hasn't been hitting his shots, and that is his main value. And so I believe that if he gets rolling and starts hitting those shots, then at least he's a good, you know, backup off the bench. And because of his track record as a good three-point shooter his entire career, I believe that he can get that going. And with Bazemore, we've now had all of this season and
last season,
at least half or more of last season, where he has really struggled on offense.
I also think the expectation and what they're expected to do out there is totally different.
Yeah.
So, like, Tolliver, when he got here, was like, maybe him and Pau Gasol can share some minutes.
Yeah.
Like, whereas you and I, especially myself, saying, oh, like, he's going to put Bazemore is going to push to be a starter. He's going to push Rodney Hood for that spot. So, yeah, I think there's a lot more room for Tolliver to continue this.
Yeah.
And since he wasn't shooting as well at the beginning of the year, we're starting to see more of what he was supposed to do now. And maybe that becomes more of a comfort thing because he's out there more and it's a role type thing where he knows where he needs to be. Whereas Bazemore is kind of all over the place.
Yeah. And potentially if Yusuf Nurkic returns, Tolliver's role, like what they need from him, you would think they wouldn't need or expect as much from him once Yusuf Nurkic returns to the lineup, whereas Bazemore, they're still going to rely on him to do what they're hoping he can do like last night. It's interesting. No more Bazemore Island over here for you fellas, huh? What happened over there?
I'm still there, man.
Yeah?
I'm
you still got there. The umbrella, the like, chair, the drink, the beverage?
It's been rainy. And yeah? Like, the weather's been really bad. You know, like, I'm having a hard time renting out the other space.
Jared, are you still there? I know you jumped ship, kind of. You kind of stayed close to the island. Are you like, floated out at sea now?
No, I'm nowhere near Bazemore Island anymore. Okay. But, I mean, I just kind of – he is what he is now.
Yeah.
You know, and I do think the other part of Matthew's question, if Bazemore plays better leading up to the deadline, does it make him more or less likely to be moved? That's such a good question, because if he's playing well and considering the Blazers' complete lack of wings, can you afford to move him unless you're getting back someone who's going to start at small forward?
Yeah.
And so I think – but at the same time, if he's playing well and looks the part of a 3-and-D guy, then there might be contenders out there that would want someone like that to help.
I also wonder if it's too late.
I mean,
it would just be like 3 weeks, two and a half weeks of good play.
Unless he falls completely off a cliff over the next 3 weeks, I don't think his play is really going to have much of a factor into whether the Blazers choose to trade him or not, or really affect his value. So we just talked about his main value is the expiring contract, and that's still going to be the case, regardless of if he plays well for a 3-week stretch or continues to be kind of what we've seen. I would hope that if he does play well over the next 3 weeks, the Blazers don't talk themselves into something like, we need this guy for this year, because forget about this year. Like, you can't have that type of thinking as an organization.
Yeah, and I think that's easy for us to see, but I don't I don't know if they see that, because they understand how important making the playoffs is to
Damian
Lillard, their franchise player. And so they might value that more than we do. You know, we can see this as a lost season. I mean, before they beat the Rockets, I was sitting there watching the Hornets game, and I was sitting next to Angie, and I said, is there something wrong with me that I kind of want the Blazers to lose this game?
The Hornets game?
The Hornets
game.
Okay. And it's because I was starting to go down the road, and I've done this with other teams I root for, is that if it's a lost season, what's the point of making the playoffs and getting swept versus bottoming out and getting a good asset? Because in the NBA and in other sports, if you're bad, you're rewarded.
Yeah.
You get a high draft pick, which would help the Blazers immensely going forward. One, it's a controlled contract and a small contract. And two, you could theoretically draft someone who would be one of the most talented players on your team. Use it as a trade asset. So I was getting close to the point, I really was, of thinking, not that I think the Blazers should tank, but that the best course for this franchise going forward would be for this season to completely just go off the rails and get as high a draft pick as possible. And
unfortunately,
Damian Lillard doesn't think that way.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are too good for the Blazers to try to tank anyway.
But are they?
Yeah.
Because with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum on this team right now, I mean, yeah, they beat the Rockets and that's great, but they're still just a few games ahead of, like, you know, the fifth worst team in the NBA.
But there's a big difference between, say, the fourth overall pick and the 10th overall pick. And Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum is that difference for Portland, in my opinion.
Yeah. because Dame was the sixth pick and CJ was the tenth.
There's a big difference between picking fourth and picking tenth. And to me, the difference having Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum makes it really difficult for you to land that fourth pick as opposed to landing the tenth pick, and those are two completely different values.
Right. Yeah. If you're playing them,
yeah,
it's going to be difficult. You better start with the minute restrictions, and
You'd have to go down that road.
Like this, start this team is games and things
yeah,
like
this
that.
Team is not going to go down that road, and I'm not saying do a full blow up, but don't get caught up in it and keep a guy who's not going to be around moving forward just because he got hot for 2 weeks right before you were probably going to trade him. Like, don't do that as an organization, and I don't think they would. I think if they keep Bazemore, it's not going to be because he plays well for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's an icing on the cake type deal if he plays well at the time, you know, February 6th rolls around.
Plus, there's some value in getting your young players like Simons and Trent. A lot of Trent Jr., lot of
and they're getting run
down the stretch. Yeah.
Yeah, they're getting run right now.
All right, you guys ready to rip it?
Let's do it.
Yep. Let's go.
Great to be back with another week of Rip It. We are coming off a tie last week between Nate and Orlando.
Orlando saved the day at the end for him and Jared's sake. I was so close to getting three.
Get that weak stuff out of here. I was so close.
You dropped a Hassan Whiteside reference.
Yep. With the way this season of Rip It has gone and how hard it is to actually win Rip It, like if you had taken a 2-win lead, that might have been enough to like sustain you the rest of the season.
I would have probably brought a cake this week.
Well, we'll save
the cake.
That's what I was just about to say, Jared. It's been tough to get wins this season.
Yes.
Let's find out how you did last week.
I feel actually all right. I feel like I'm in contention again this week. Ooh.
I don't know, because I remember that I picked Harden to go over 36 and a half or whatever it was.
Yeah, I think I did the same thing.
Well, let's start with the Timberwolves game. First question, more points, Andrew Wiggins or C.J. McCollum? Nate went with Andrew Wiggins. Orlando and Jared both went with C.J., and this was Wiggins.
Yep.
23-15.
C.J.
Not very close.
Christian James, come on, man.
Yeah, man.
Bad game for all the Blazers.
That's two good games Wiggins has had against the Blazers this year. He's lit them up twice.
Speaking of bad games, Blazers versus Bucks. The question was, which team will shoot a better three-point percentage?
I sure hope I took the Bucks.
Jared and Nate picked the Bucks. Mm. Orlando, you went with the home team.
Ouch.
Bucks shot 37% from three.
Maybe Portland did.
Blazers, 28%.
All right, there we go. That seems more right.
That's accurate.
Yeah,
I'm happy I don't have the goose egg. So.
Yeah. I remember thinking when he asked that question last week, like, I'm taking the Bucks, like, no matter what. Like, no matter what he throws at me, I'm taking the Bucks.
Yeah. Well played.
Moving on to the Hornets game, the question here, most rebounds, Carmelo Anthony, Bismack Biyombo, or P.J. Washington?
Oh, I feel good about this one.
Yeah.
Well, Nate went with the rookie, P.J. Washington. Orlando, you went with Bismack, who did not play coach's decision.
Dude, this is a really rough week for you. A DNP.
Just not my time, man.
Jared went three to the dome.
Ooh. Mello.
Carmelo, only 6 rebounds. Washington double-doubled in a big way with 11 rebounds. He looks good.
Yeah, he had like 18 points too.
Have you got like all three right? So
I'm 3 for 3 so far, man. Is that Jared? You only have one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I just need to get one of these next two right.
Come on, Jared.
Oh man,
we need you.
Oh,
we need you, Jared.
Man,
I already know that I'm wrong on one of them.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You guys mentioned this next question: Blazers at Rockets, over under 36.5 for James Harden. Nate, you went over.
So this is going to end my perfect streak here.
Orlando, you went under.
Well, all right, way to go, Orlando, on the board.
And Jared, you said I got burned last time by going over, so I'm going to go over again.
You got really burned again, Jared.
Oh, man, stupid Harden.
You guys talked about it, 13 points for Harden, way under.
Wow, that was season low.
Shocking.
Yeah.
The wild card question of the week was the revenge game over-under 17.5 points for Carmelo Anthony. All three of you went over. and he scored 18 points.
Wow, what a line, Max. What a line. Yeah. Oh, Max, well done on that one.
Well, you are a machine.
But more importantly than that.
What a week. What a week, gentlemen.
Nate Hansen, 4 out of 5.
I'm disgusted.
That's got to be your highest ever, Nate. Congratulations.
That probably is. And that's 3 now, my friends.
Man,
3 Rip It titles so far
this
year.
This is huge, Jared.
You guys, you're like the Blazers. You're starting to run out of time here to turn this thing around.
Is this a lost season?
Yeah.
Should you tank? That way, man.
Orlando, what's worse, having the knowledge that we might not be able to come back from this or knowing we have to deal with Nate bragging about it the whole time.
Oh gosh, the latter.
It could be a really long off season too compared to the last one. Last one the Blazers played well into May. They may end in mid-April. So I may get an extra month of bragging on you.
Oh, no.
Man, we got to do something about this, Orlando.
This is disgusting.
He's insufferable right now.
This feels You know what, guys? You guys know I wasn't having the best day. I had some travel snafus. I'm feeling pretty good right now.
I'm happy for you because of that. There we go.
Thank you. Jared, you're also very kind.
Thanks.
All right. Well, there's a lot of love in the room. Yeah. Let's move on to
this is
week,
what Jared and I are usually like, as opposed to at each other's throats.
Orlando and Jared, you guys can turn it around right now.
Yep. Gonna do it.
I'm thinking let's keep building, man.
All right. Blazers at Mavericks. Who's going to score more points? Damian Lillard or Luka Doncic?
Oh, man.
I think I know where Nate's going. Start us off.
I want to go there. I really do. But I'm going to go with Dame. I'm going against my boy.
Okay. Orlando.
I've got to make up some ground. I wanted to go Dame in every way possible, but I've got to start playing for the win here. So I'll take Luka.
All right, Jared.
Oh, man. I'm becoming the hunted all of a sudden. Wow. Yep. What a change.
I was Doncic from the start. I'm going with Luka.
Okay.
All right, well, there's one for me.
Next question, same game.
Love it.
Which total will be greater? Points from Anthony Simons or assists from Luka Doncic?
Max has really tested me now.
Where's your loyalty? Where's your loyalty?
Max throwing in any Anthony Simons one is really testing me. Like he's praying. He's like trying to help you guys, really. He's trying to bait me into taking Anthony Simons, who probably will only score like 4 or 5 points.
Well, Anthony Simons averages about 9 points a game.
That's
Doncic,
true.
Doncic, 9 assists.
That's true. Simons' points per game over the last month has not been 9 points per game, I don't think.
Okay, so which way are you going?
I'm going with Doncic. I'm going back to my boy on this one. Let's swing to Doncic.
All right.
Sorry, Anthony.
Jared, what do you think?
I want to go Doncic. I'm wondering, though. I kind of want to oppose Nate on every question, though.
Well, that would have got you one right last time, which is, I think, what you got.
Yeah, I'm going to go with my gut. I'm going to go Doncic.
All right, Orlando?
Not me, man. I'm here to punish Nate for picking against his boy.
I think you're punishing yourself, my friend.
Penny is going off.
Penny Simons
is going for 11.
Dude.
All right.
11.
That's what you think.
He's going off.
11 points.
Go to 11.
Get that double digit, baby.
Come on, give Penny a little more credit than
that. Yeah, like Luka could have like 13 assists. He may have to score like 14 or 15 to do this, man.
He could.
I think he had 13 assists yesterday.
Luka's going to be held in check to 10 assists.
So Luka. Well done.
Shut him down.
Shut him down, and Anthony's going off, baby.
Yep.
All right, moving on. Blazers at Thunder. Who will make the most three-pointers in this game? CJ, Danilo Gallinari, or Dennis Schroeder?
Oh, man.
I'm going to go with future Portland Trailblazer Danilo Gallinari.
Wow, there you go.
Okay.
There you go.
Standing pass.
Blazers are going to have to be offering something that they supposedly don't want to give up if they're going to bring him in.
Orlando, what do you think?
I was watching a lot of old highlights of that Nuggets series last playoffs, and it got me back on that CJ train. Even though he did me wrong last week in Rip It, I'm going Christian James.
I feel like since you picked CJ – when he wasn't even an option once, that you have to forever pick CJ the rest of the season because of that. I'm going to roll with Orlando on this one. CJ McCollum.
No love for Schroeder.
No.
All right.
He's having a good year.
He's having a good year, yeah.
Blazers versus Warriors. How many Warriors were scored in double figures?
Oh, not this one again.
Against the Blazers.
Oh, this is a little change, right? Previously, it was how many Blazers against the Warriors. Mm. Who even can score 10 points on the Warriors? Pascal?
How many?
Is Draymond going to play?
How many players can I name on the Warriors?
Glenn Robinson III, he's still there, right?
Yeah.
He's there.
Is Willie Cauley-Stein still there?
He's there.
Alec Burks, he won the last Warriors question we did. I forgot what it was, but he won it.
He's still there.
While D'Angelo Nate Russell. Waxes poetic, I'm just going to put in my answer at 4.
All right. Orlando, what do you think?
I think that's been my, like, steady go-to answer on this, and I've been wrong every time, so 4.
We're going 5, baby.
Oh, wow.
We're going 5. Yeah. The Warriors have scored against the Blazers. Like, that has not been an issue for them, so I think they're going to score again.
Yeah. All right.
And someone's got to do it. Hopefully 5 of them do.
We'll find out. The wild card question of the week is all about Bazemore.
Oh, nice. Bazy, it's cold outside.
Ooh. All right, over under 3.5 steals in the next 3 games for Kent Bazemore. He's got 3 games.
We'll see how far Jared has fled off Bazemore Island. I know what Orlando's
I'm already
relaxing.
Here,
yeah. Oh, yeah, he's kicking back.
The pull-out chair.
Yeah, Orlando's going over on this
one. Clearly taking the over.
Yeah.
Jared, what are you taking?
Let's go with the over.
Oh, I'm going under. Yeah. All right. You might as well just give me 4 right now for Rip It Wins. Yeah, under.
We will find out in a much-anticipated Rip It recap next week.
Got to get back in this room, Jared.
You know what's going to happen is because I got all braggadocious again. I'm going to get like 1 out of 5again. But I'm much better when I'm humble, but I'm not good at being humble, which is an issue.
Yeah, the one win I have this season in Rip It.
You were not here.
No, I was here.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Well, the recap, you called in.
Yeah, yeah. And I goose-egged it.
Oh, yeah.
That's next week.
Yeah. So. Well, how do we feel about the Blazers, guys? I feel like we feel the same as we did a week ago. Not much changed despite that win.
We've been hurt before, dude.
Yeah? Like, we've been hurt a lot this year.
We're damaged goods right now.
Yeah, man. Like, we spent all offseason saying, if things break right. Yeah. And now it's just like, can just like one thing kind of break right for like more than a day?
They are what they are, but we still have the trade deadline to look forward to and Nurkic coming back.
The return.
The return of Nurkic, that's going to be exciting. Man.
Yeah.
It's going to be good to see him back out there.
Double Beast, hopefully our podcast next week is as good as the return of Yusuf Nurkic.
There we go. What a tease. Way to go, man. Way to go out on a high note.